Morning, everybody. It's Wednesday, May 13th, 2009. I'd like to open up the House Committee on Human Services. And if you haven't noticed, I'm not Carolyn Tomei. So,
really?
Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, she's ill today, and we're moving forward then with foster care transition issues informational meeting. And I don't have a list.
The Reagan Gray group has a presentation. You guys will come forward and introduce yourself for the record.
You'd spend it.
No, we don't.
Madam Chair, you've changed.
DCDS does over $500 million. DHS doesn't have one. Actually, they do.
Oh, you're at.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting the Oregon Foster Youth Connection Group to come and testify before you today. My name is Kathy Kaufman, and I'm the Policy and Communications Director for Children First. And I'm not going to be part of the formal presentation, but I just wanted to introduce myself since I'll answer any questions that the youth don't answer for you. So, I'll turn it over to you.
Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pamela Butler. I am the Policy and Outreach Associate for Children First, also known as the Oregon Foster Youth Connection Coordinator. I've been, for the last year, kind of getting this group together and coordinating current and former foster youth to become self-advocates. So I'm here to talk to you today, introduce you to the group, and talk about youth in transition, and then the youth are going to actually come up and tell you more about that as far as their experiences go. So the Oregon Foster Youth Connection, their mission is to improve the Oregon foster care system through advocacy, activism, and leadership. It's a youth-led, youth-driven group of youth from ages 14 to 25. They created the mission. They write the rules. I'm just there to facilitate the logistics of the meetings, make sure it all runs well. And I'm a former foster youth myself, so I'm definitely invested in the cause. A little bit about them, like I just said. And they work on my job is to make sure these youth get trained and they're able to talk about their experiences in foster care in a powerful way, in a constructive way, that they can then come out and say, you know, this happened to me, but maybe it could be done this way and I would have had a better life, or, you know, my sibling would have had a better life. So we work to train them, bring in professionals, bring in some people from around the state. There's Foster Club who trains youth to be self-advocates. They do great seminars. We're working with them. And there's also the California Youth Connection, which is the group that we've tried to model this after. And we've actually been working directly with them through the whole thing. And they actually came up in February. And I know some of you might have met some of our youth already during the Advocacy Day in February. And so we train them, bring them out here, and they're advocating on multiple levels with the legislator, with you guys, with DHS directly, working with the ILP programs, independent living program. And then their hope is to go on and do trainings around the state for CASAs, CRBs, citizen review boards, caseworkers, foster parents, anyone who wants to hear from the youth, they're willing to talk. So I want to go first to give you a little facts before the members of the Oregon Foster Youth Connection come up, and so you kind of have a better idea of how this is exactly affecting Oregon. And I apologize for reading, but I feel like the numbers are pretty powerful. So in 2007, this data is a mix from 07 and 08. There were about 15,000 kids who went through the foster care system at any time over the whole year. And of those kids, about 4,201 were ages 14 to 18, which is kind of the age that we consider transitioning because they're the ones who qualify for independent living program services. Of those youth, about 1,456 current and former foster youth received ILP services in 2008. And ILP is, for those who aren't familiar, but I think most of you might be, it was the services you can get at 14, and it's you get a different worker, and those people help you transition, and you can learn how to cook, to clean, how to do a budget, how to write a resume, how to find a job. ILP is there to teach you to be independent, because although you have foster parents who might have that ability, if you move homes, which the older youth often do, they have less stability than the younger kids. You're not getting that same follow-up on learning these skills, and so you might age out and have, you know, not even a skill to get a job or even know how to write a resume. So ILP is there to bolster that and make sure that the youth who come into their program leave CARE with the right skills to make it in life. Oh, and the other thing is that 20% of youth who come into CARE are actually separated from their siblings, which is one of the issues that's going to come up later. So with some numbers about length of stay, on average, youth spent, there was a study done in 2006 by the Casey Family Programs of the Northwest alumni, and these are the numbers from that study. And on average, youth spent 6 years in foster care, but it's found that 40% of them spent more than 6 years. They have an average of 6.5 placements, but 32% of the youth studied actually had 8 or more placements over those average of 6 years. And of those youth that were studied, 30% of them changed schools 10 or more times, and 35% changed 7 to 9 times. So this is just like a picture of the absolute instability you face as a youth in foster care. And these numbers are for those kids who were studied who were alumni over their length of foster care. And other studies have shown that for the teens now, it's actually less stable because for some reason teens just get moved a lot more. So the challenges that this presents, and that was found in multiple studies, is that 1 in 5 youth experience homelessness at some point after care, which is much higher than the general population. I think the general population was about less than 1% experienced homelessness after the age of 18. Employment rates were at 80% compared to the national average of 95% of the same age group. 1/3 of foster care alumni households live below the federal poverty line. So just a few ways that youth are challenged after they leave care because of the instability and stress of being in care.
Excuse me.
Representative Van Orman.
Could you explain the alumni household? Are you talking about the family that they stayed with?
Yeah, so okay. This is when they did these studies, they did study, and I think it was foster care alumni who were anywhere from 18 to 34 years old, I think was the pool. And so of those 18 to 34-year-olds, 1/3 of them at the time were living below the FPL.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So just going a little bit more detail about some health care disadvantages. 33% of those who were studied actually lacked health insurance, compared to the same age group in the general population, which is 18% who were uninsured. 54% had current mental health problems, and the mental health problems, they were conducted by the Composite International Diagnosis Interview, which is a World Health-approved psychiatric diagnostic interview. And so that's how they came up with the number of 54% had mental health problems. And then also 25% had PTSD, compared to 12% of Iraq veterans and 15% of Vietnam. So the numbers are out there, that just the trauma you experience in the removal of your parents, you know, abuse and then removal and then possible further abuse. I think there was a pretty high average of kids who'd experienced some form of abuse in foster care in this study, but I don't have the number here. As far as education goes, this is another huge barrier that OFYC is working on and cares a lot about. So only 56% of foster youth studied had earned a high school diploma. There were more that earned their GED that went on later to earn their GED, but at this time only 56% had their diploma. And then the more staggering number is that only 2% get a bachelor's degree or higher. It's actually 1.8, rounded up. So, you know, the numbers just tell you, and there's many reasons why youth would have trouble getting into higher education. I mean, when you leave care, you might not know how to apply for financial aid, you might not have the supports, and if you're homeless, you can't, obviously, you're not able to go and fill out financial aid forms and pay to apply for colleges, and the stressors are there. And then I think there was a higher percentage of kids who actually entered college and then dropped out. Because, and we all know why, it's because once you get in, you know, you don't have a family to go home to over the Christmas break or the holiday, or, you know, you miss 2 weeks of work because you're really sick and then you can't pay your term and then you get shut down from school, and because you're not at school, your financial aid doesn't cover things, and it's just like the snowball effect of the reasons why. And, you know, a lot of kids might have parents who, you know, cover that term, or a grandparent, and if you're in foster care and you've lost touch with all these people and you moved so much, as you saw, and you're unstable, you just don't have those connections with an adult who is stable enough to help you through tough times when you're in college. So in addition, there's some good things. ILP, through the Independent Living Program, a lot of kids apply for the educational training grant to go to college. But as you can see, 181 youth received it, but 428 youth applied last year. So there's some good things going on out there, but it's definitely not meeting the need of the youth who are asking for it. And that just shows, you know, there's 428 youth who got into college who wanted to go and weren't able to get the support. So a couple of things that you can do this session is there are a few issues out there on the table right now. And one is providing OHP to foster youth from 18 to 21, so that when you age out of care and you almost, as you can see, most don't go off to school, you actually have some health care services, because I think we've testified a few times to say that, you know, you get out of care and maybe you don't think you want any help, and you're going to make it on your own and you're tired of the system. You know, 6 months down the line, you get sick and you realize, oh gosh, I should have applied for that OHP before I left foster care. And then you don't have any options, and then you're just, you know, sick and going to the ER and having worse medical problems later on in life. Other thing is to create consistency and support for youth obtaining driver's license. There was some work that we did, but the bill came to the committee too late, and we understand that, and so we're hoping later on to bring that back. And it would allow foster youth to get their licenses, so at least when they leave care, you know, they were able to go through driver's ed, get it paid for, and have that form of identification that's going to, you know, help them get a job and help them do things after they leave, when they might not have the financial ability to pay for driver's ed, to get lower car insurance, or even have, you know, the paperwork to get a driver's license, like your birth certificate and Social Security card, because often kids leave care without those documents, unfortunately. And the other thing is protecting funding for child welfare. I know things are terrible right now, but, you know, there's a lot of youth and young people and kids who are counting on the state to care for them and to make sure that their lives are, you know, at least, you know, the least in the least turmoil. What's it, tumultuous as it can be. So protecting, you know, caseworkers' jobs so that they can help these kids transition out of care, help these families get back together and get the services they need. I think we need to focus on those people who are making sure that these youth and young people have a successful future. So those are a few things that you can think about this session that are actually happening to help foster youth. So what you can do in the future, these are a few things that the OFYC has kind of come up with through lots of discussions over the last year. One thing is that we know that there's a former youth scholarship out there, but that it's not funded. So that would be something to keep in mind for the future. Also, there's been a lot of talk about creating a position at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission this person would be solely, their job would be to help foster youth in higher ed, so help them get connected to resources in their areas, get connected to healthcare, to financial aid, just help them in all the ways that they need help, like any youth would need help going off to college all alone for the first time. Also, to possibly create a task force to think about these issues. What can we do to make higher education more accessible to these foster youth who obviously aren't getting there if only 2% are making it to the bachelor's degree? And lastly, an issue that comes up time and time again is sibling separation. And we don't have all the answers right now, but we would like there to be some discussion and investigation into, you know, what other states are doing to keep siblings together and what can be done to ensure that they have connections even if they're separated in care. So that's, I think, all I have. If you have any questions, and if not, we'll bring up some of the members of OFYC to speak with you.
Representative Van Oren.
Thank you, Chair Olson. In Hood River, we have an agency now called WINGS, which, through the incredible energy of Allison Pate, and a lot of fundraising is housing for children who've aged out. So it's primarily for young men. And are there any other instances in this state where something like that is occurring?
Housing for youth?
Well, it's basically a program that includes the kinds of things you were saying, the counseling, the housing, helping kids get jobs or get their GED or whatever. That's the mission mm-hmm. of the group. And so are there others in this state?
Yes, I believe that there are.
Okay.
I don't know the names off the top of my head, but I know there is some. But they're, you know, very limited in their resources and the youth that they're able to touch aren't the, you know, full spectrum of the youth that age out.
Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Vice Chair.
That's right. Thank you. Is this?
Yeah. Don't want to give him the big head. You don't talk about permanency in here?
Mm-hmm.
Did it not make the top of the cut list or comments on why you didn't address it?
Well, I think the data was the big touch point on that about the instability in foster care. In permanency, I think we didn't put it on here because it's one of those ones we figure everyone gets.
I actually don't think everybody gets it.
Mm-hmm.
For people that aren't involved in the system, it isn't. Mm-hmm. Something that they think about.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, if anyone needs a stable home, and I mean, as you could see from the numbers, these people who aged out had been in more homes than most people touch in their lives, in more schools than you'd ever want to go to. And in those transitions and that lack of permanency, it creates these bad outcomes. Health outcomes are poor for youth who age out because they didn't have consistent medical support for chronic illnesses. They move to new doctors and their records are lost, so maybe the doctor doesn't know that they had this other illness, and so they lose their medication. They fall back. You know, by the time they age out, they get to a new doctor, and they can't tell them what they ever had, how many surgeries they've had, when they were. You know, those records just get so lost in the transition. It's the same thing for school. You move all those schools, you lose your credits, they don't transfer. That's why so many kids don't get their diplomas from high school and they go on to get a GED, because they are smart enough and they do have the passion, but they moved so many times their credits are gone. And, you know, who wants to stay an extra year at high school and be the laughingstock? So what do? You go get your GED. So those are all things that, you know, build up to these outcomes, and permanency is a big cause and a big stressor for those poor outcomes in healthcare
and education. What does permanency mean to you?
Well, permanency means living in a community and having someone know your name and living with someone who doesn't just call you a foster kid. Maybe you become their kid. I think anybody would tell you, whether they want to be adopted or not, that living in a place where, you know, your neighbor knows your name or your teachers actually know you, it's life-changing to be somewhere where people know who you are and not continually having to introduce yourself and be the outsider. So I think permanency is being somewhere where people know you and you feel safe.
And actually, Pam, to follow up with what Representative Maurer said, it does. I am intrigued that 33%, I think it was, 30% of foster youth change schools 10-plus times. And that's K through 12 that you're focused on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of time to changing. I mean, and you don't. I just don't see how you ever do create stability with that. And I understand what you said as you closed with one of the things that you're interested in seeing doing for providing maybe, excuse me, additional education past K through 12 for them. But unless you have this stability end on it developed first, I don't see then how you can move forward with that. I'm interested in what you were thinking of doing with the driver's license issue.
Well, I think if you want to talk more about that.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, if I could respond first to the issue of permanency that both you and Representative Maurer raised, because it's an incredibly important one.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I can speak for the youth, they focused on transition because that's the issue that's most fresh in their minds. These are all youth who are in the middle of transitioning or have just transitioned and have experienced how little support they got in that process, going from a teen to adulthood. You know, most of us get help from our parents and our community, and it's a difficult time for anyone, but especially when you have no one to guide you through it or help you with any of the financial resources that you need. But certainly, permanency needs to be at the top of the list when we're talking about kids who are brought into the child welfare system. And that's especially, it's true for all kids. It's especially true for older youth because they have a much harder time achieving permanency. They experience far more placements. They're far less likely to get permanency within 2 years of coming into care. And, you know, you're right to point that out, and that needs to continue to be a focus. And given the difficult budget climate we're in, our hope is that we won't go backwards on the progress that we've made. Children First has a lot of faith in the current leadership at the Department of Human Services and at CAF. We think Dr. Goldberg and Ms. Kelly Seal are on the right track, and they have the integrity and intent and ability to continue to make progress. What we need to do is hold steady right now. We do believe that workload is probably one of the number one issues that's going to impact the quality of life of kids who are in foster care. It's going to impact how often they get to see family members they're separated from. It's going to impact their ability to be safe while they're in placement. And it's going to impact their ability to get the kinds of services they need to either go back home or find another permanent placement or transition out on their own. So, you know, it's a general response, but I want to underscore how right you are to bring it up and how concerned we all need to be about it for all kids, but especially for older youth who are in really our custody. We're the parents of these youth as a state. As far as the driver's license bill, this is one of those things when your kids turn 16, whether you like it or not, you know, you help them get their driver's license. You let them use your car sometimes. For foster youth, they don't get that. They, you know, they're the one kid in the class while everyone's talking about having passed their driver's license. They don't have it. It's one more way in which they're different from other kids. They don't get to go through the same transitions in young adulthood that other kids get to do. So these youth who are incredibly empowered and passionate want to change that, and their hope is that we can put policies and some funding in place that will make it a natural part of any foster kid who turns 16, unless there's some very good reason for it, they'll get assistance in getting their driver's license. And we're working with the department on that and look forward to making that a reality for them.
Okay. Thank you. President Van Horn.
Thank you, Chair Olson.
Jeez. This is brutal this morning.
Dimly.
Lower chair.
I'm respectful. Anyway, you know, over the years, we've had this issue of instability for kids and being in and out of homes and trying to find adequate placements for them. And over the years, I have really wondered if maybe, in fact, we need residential facilities for some of these children, because this in and out of foster homes, I think, is very detrimental. And to have at least a stable place that you can make a room your own seems to me a far better solution than being bounced from house to house. I'm sorry to say it that way, but...
Mr. Vice Chair. Don't want to be disrespectful. And members of the committee, Representative Van Orman, I appreciate your comments. And I think the fact of the matter is it's going to take a variety of placements so that all the kids who have many different needs are going to have their needs met, and we can gain some ground on permanency for them. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Hoffman.
That's very good. I took that from Mallard. Thank you, Sub-Chair Olson. back to the driver's license question. What are the hurdles, though? I guess I'm not hearing that. Is it sign-off on a guardian? Is it insurance? What are the hurdles that we need to overcome?
Well, I think I'm going to call up, if you don't mind, Mr. Vice Chair and Representative Reagan Gray, who's worked the bill, if that's
okay. We do have somebody from Department of Motor Vehicles here to help out, too, with some of that.
That's with a different one, I think.
Thank you, Vice Chair Olson, Representative Huffman. House Bill 35, Reagan Gray for the record, I'm with Children First for Oregon, and House Bill 3464 was introduced very late in the session as a result of legislative meetings by Oregon Foster Youth Connection. One of the issues that came up in a meeting with Representative Buckley was difficulty and consistency of being able to get your driver's license. So he introduced a priority bill, unfortunately came to this committee too late in order to work it and move the bill forward. What it did was create some sort of consistency because some counties have decided that that you can't get your driver's license until you're 18. Some say you can get it at 16. So there's this there's inconsistency in whether you can get it at that time. There's difficulty for foster youth to get their vital records to even be able to apply for their driver's license. There's difficulty in having the funding to be able to get the education, driver's education, in order to get the license. There were a whole myriad of issues that we listed out in the bill. Again, unfortunately, the bill didn't get to move forward this session. It's an issue. It's an issue we would like to bring up again because a former foster youth not having a driver's license when they've aged out of the system, they no longer have that support, anyone to teach them how to drive, a caseworker to help find the vital records. I mean, there's a whole list of things that are in front of them that make it difficult, more difficult for them to obtain their driver's license. Plus, it's harder for them to get a job, to go to school, you know, all those things that we take for granted because we're able to drive. So,
follow up, Mr. Vice Chair.
Yes.
Brief question. You mentioned some counties have a separate statute that.
No, it is. They get to decide. It's loosely written in the law how they have to help with transition services. Maybe Pamela might understand a little bit more of this.
Yeah, members of the committee, it's. The issue was, it's not even by county, it's not even by, like, county statute, it's that I could have, you know, X caseworker and Y supervisor and be in the same county as, you know, another youth, and my people who would have to sign off on my driver's license would say, no, you shouldn't have it, for whatever reason, and in many cases, there aren't good reasons, and then my youth who I meet up with once a week at ILP would tell me, oh, well, I went and got mine, and my caseworker signed off on it, so we had a big training in February, and the youth started talking and found out, like, wow, you got yours? I can't get mine. That's not fair. And so that's how it came up, and that's how it came to Representative Buckley. And it's more of an inconsistency in youth being able to obtain it if they're eligible. And so we decided, you know, if you meet the DMV requirements, if you have the money and you are organized and a responsible person, then you should be able to get it by your own rights and have no one stand in your way. So this created a process for you doing that and also an appeal process if it's rejected by your caseworker or supervisor so that if you are the empowered youth and they have said no for no valid reason, you can actually go around them and appeal it and fight for your right to have a license.
And members of the committee, we saw this as a way of empowering the youth, allowing them to have a little bit more control in their life and where it's going. And and we also went through what are the reasons why youth may not be able to get their license. They're flight risk. They've, you know, had issues with drug and alcohol, and put those things in the statute too. So it's really a way to help the youth be more responsible, empowered, and create some consistency because they will be able to initiate the process rather than having a caseworker or supervisor decide whether they want to deal with it or not.
Thank you.
Okay.
One last comment.
Yeah, Representative Maryland.
Thank you. Young lady, you've been in front of this committee more than a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I've known you.
Other committees, too.
Another committee? Yeah. Education. And your performance today was outstanding, and you were so much better than you were the first time I saw you. not that you were, but...
It's getting warmed up.
Not only did you know your presentation, but the backup, the statistics, the sources, quite impressive.
Thank you.
Okay, so Pam, you have additional folks then you want to come up?
Yes.
Okay.
The members of the Oregon Foster Youth Connection have some.
Wanted to say, Pamela, you are probably one of the best spokespersons for your issue that I've ever heard. Very articulate, clear. And everybody should have someone as bright as you pleading their cause.
Well, we've got three more back here.
You did very a great good. Job. Yeah, so it can only go uphill, right? You
yep.
know?
Exactly.
Thank you. No pressure, guys.
I do not know.
Maybe they don't have the reminder.
Anyways, before you begin speaking, if you'd just share us with your name.
Mr. Chair, did you notice what he just did? Hold out the
I
chair
did.
For the young lady?
I did.
Points.
Yep, point right there. Points.
Oh, why, thank you. My name's Omar Nagadi.
I'm Jamie Hinn. And I'm Stacy Carter.
Omar, you're going first?
Sure.
Okay.
My name's Omar Nagadi, and I'm a student at Portland State. I'm hoping to go to graduate school after next year, but I might take some time off and work. We'll see. So I'm testifying today in regards to healthcare and healthcare issues foster youth face when they exit care. When I was in high school, my GPA was about 3.2, and I was in Police Activities League all throughout high school, and I got Volunteer of the Year my senior year. I went to Sherwood High, and I did really well academically. But it wasn't until I came into college and I started realizing I had some kind of problems academically. I found out after I quit my job as a resident assistant, I got evaluated for learning disabilities at the Student Health and Resource Center on campus, and I had ADHD, and I've had it throughout my entire life, but it wasn't until I came into college and I had to push myself beyond, you know, elementary school, middle school, and high school that, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, I'm having problems, you know, organizing things, or I'm having problems keeping track of turning in assignments at specific times. And I've undergone treatment for it, and I was put on that term before I started treatment. I was on academic probation, and if I was put on academic probation another term, I would have gotten kicked out, and that would have been very sad. But as soon as I started getting treatment, I was getting, you know, A's and B's, and, you know, that's pretty much what I get now, and, you know, I'm doing fine, you know, academically, I'm doing well, or not good, well, or grammatically, well, it's supposed to be better, but it would have been really sad if I had to drop out, because I feel that, you know, I'm bright enough and talented enough to get a college degree and go beyond that. And I got a really good scholarship, and they were able to help provide treatment for ADHD with that. And I'm probably one of the most privileged foster youth that to be able to receive something like that. And but even with that, I almost didn't make it because I was on academic probation. And it's so sad because there are so many youth who are just as talented or just as bright as I am, and even more talented or brighter, and, you know, they can't have the opportunities that, you know, that I'm getting. And that's really sad because they could do so much more that I could do or that we could do, and I really hope that you consider that when you think about this bill. And I think that's about it, unless you have any questions.
Let's just move through the panel then. Okay. Thank you.
My name's Jamie, and I am the president of OFYC. And
I actually wanted to make a comment on your question about the residential. Actually, Oregon is experimenting with different types of residential programs for former foster youth. So I know that in Lane County, they were going to start a program for girls through the independent living program that was mentioned before. And it's where about 5 girls live in the same house, and, you know, they have the same caseworker and the same kind of contacts just to help them transition through college. And it hasn't been implemented yet, but there are also other independent living programs that, you know, different housing programs that they're just kind of experimenting with. So nothing is set right now. But, and I wanted to make a comment about transition. The whole reason that I believe that there's so much transition is because there's all these other little problems that we haven't solved yet, and all these little tasks that need to be done. So, you know, driving and healthcare and all that kind of thing, and all those add together result in a lot of different transitioning and going through different homes and different schools. And then that also results in more problems, such as, you know, when I was a child, I had 7 different grade schools, so I never did DARE because I was leaving 5th grade and going to another 5th grade as my other 5th grade is starting and the new one was just finishing. And I never had sexual education, and I never had driver's education. I had really ill-informed foster parents, so I was able to manipulate my way through the DMV and through my caseworkers to get my license, which is not great, but, you know, got what I needed. And you have to have a certain personality, I think, to be able to realize that it is in your power to do this kind of thing. And a lot of youth in care are more under the impression that the government is their parents and what they say goes. And I was more rebellious in a way that I decided I didn't deserve to be treated this way, so I wanted my license and I went and got it. And I wanted to go to college and I went and got it. And, you know, I'm not making bad decisions and I'm not doing drugs or alcohol. I'm not pregnant or anything. I'm safe when it comes to those kind of things. And so I didn't feel like that was something that needed to be held from me. So that's all about transition and education. When it comes to healthcare, it's really important because last spring I was diagnosed with mono, and I still actually have it. And I'm allergic to penicillin, so I couldn't have any medicine for it. I was on steroids, and I had to pay for it out of my own pocket because I didn't have any health care. And my school doesn't cater to illnesses, so I failed my math class, but my GPA was well enough that it didn't affect me that much, but I'm still working on getting it back up. And I'm hoping that it's not going to affect my GPA when I apply for law school, which I'm going to be doing next fall. So, that is my story.
I'm Stacy, and, well, many foster youth, when transitioning out of foster care, have troubles acquiring the basic needs of health care. They don't have the resources like many other youth do, such as having medical insurance until they're 24 because they can still be on their parents' medical plan. It almost makes me jealous when I hear my friends talking about how they get medical until they're 24, and they stop my medical when I turn 19, and I get sick a lot. I end up trying to go to the health center at school, and they don't do very much. They don't give me very much medication because they can only prescribe over the counter. I can't go to the ER because I can't afford it. And it's hard because, like, you have all these other bills. You have all these other things that you're trying to take care of. You're trying to get independent. You're trying to transition out of care. And one more thing holding you back, like your health, and you're trying to go to school, you're trying to get your grades to where you can graduate from college and beat the statistics, but you get sick and you end up missing a couple of days of class, and your GPA starts falling, and it's not fun, and it hurts because, like, looking at everybody else, where it just seems unfair to us. It seems unfair to foster kids not to have their health care and not be able to have all the resources for higher education, like knowing how to get the financial aid and knowing how to navigate college. Like, when I I remember the first day I went to college, I was so scared. I didn't know where to go. I didn't have my schedule printed out. I didn't even know what teacher I had. I didn't know what room, what building, nothing. And I was lucky enough to have my friend's mom. Like, she called me to ask me how my first day of college was going. I was just like, not good. I don't know where I am. Don't know where I'm going. Don't know how to even get to my first class. And she helped me navigate through college, and she helped me find the different resources that I could use, like the Writing Center and the Learning Center and the Student Enrichment Program, where they like help you study and help you acquire more skills that you need when you're trying to get through college. And without those kind of people, it's hard. It's hard for foster like kids who don't have those parents, who don't have those people around them to take care of them and show them the path. So.
Representative Van Orman, you had a question.
Yes, I do. There are four things that I am interested to know. Of course, for Omar, I'm interested to know why you weren't diagnosed earlier. Do you guys have counseling? Do you get counseling services? And I presume you all have to have jobs and go to school at the same time. And are you on the Oregon Health Plan?
Me first? Okay.
Whoever wants to answer the question, but this one is specific about you in your diagnosis.
Sure. I think over the course from the time I was, K through 12, I've went through 16 to 17 different schools. I went into care when I was when I was 13, but before that, I moved around a lot, and I still did really good, I would still do that academically. I passed all the, all the benchmarks with, for reading and writing and arithmetic and, what is that called? When I was in high school, you had this certificate of mastery, I got that when I was in high school, and I did fine. I was doing excellent, but it just wasn't I got into college, and, ADHD reared its ugly head. I couldn't turn in all my assignments on time, and I just experienced difficulty, and I had some counseling, but usually it's like, hey, and they ask you, do you want to kill yourself? And I'm like, I'm fine, actually, But, sometimes I have problems, turning in my assignments, like, in the first couple of years, it's typical, I was like, I guess I'm doing A-okay, bye. I don't know, I was doing pretty well. But then, it got to a point where I realized I had a problem, it got taken care of, so I was lucky.
Thank you.
But there's a lot of people who aren't, so.
The only question I would remember is if we're on the OHP plan or not.
Yes.
I'm not, and so if I get swine flu, I might as well just go live under a rock. I can't get back.
And no, I don't have it either.
Jobs? You all have to have jobs?
Yes.
You've all got jobs?
Yes. I have my work study.
Okay. So that's a job.
Yeah.
I'm an intern with Oregon Partnership, and
okay.
It's an unpaid internship, but I need it for, it's a degree requirement. It's an 8-credit degree requirement that I have to do, so.
Okay. And I'm one of the supervisors at Dairy Queen in West Salem.
I'm sorry?
And I'm one of the supervisors at Dairy Queen in West Salem.
Oh, okay. So. Thanks.
Representative Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Provisional Chair.
this is all of you.
Now, I'd like to, first of all, echo the comments that Representative Maurer made, just appreciating your coming before us. This is, I believe, the third committee that I sit on that some combination of you know, Pam, Omar, Stacy, and Jamie have come before us. I know you've also been at the Education Committee and the Healthcare Committee to talk about these issues. And, you know, I think that that's a testament really to two things. First, the complex and multidimensional nature of, you know, our responsibility for Oregon foster youth, and also just the, you know, really impressive sort of self-empowerment that I'm seeing in your organization, which, you know, I think too often people think of foster youth as being, you know, victims of the system. But you all, you know, I think are really taking responsibility for improving the system, and I think it's a great thing. You know, the issue of healthcare, you know, during that critical sort of transitional time after you've turned 18, I think you made your case really well before the healthcare committee. And, you know, I know that that's being looked at very seriously as we're looking at expanding eligibility for coverage. And, you know, I think that we should hear about that pretty soon. You know, we're hoping. But a lot of it really is, you know, testimony to the work that you've been doing. I'm wondering, are there kind of any long-term projections for how you're going to build your organization to keep on doing this kind of advocacy? Because, you know, this is not some, we're not going to be able to solve all the problems this session, right? And so what kind of plans do you all have for the future, you know, in terms of helping spread the word about the organization and just being better advocates?
I can answer that. OFYC, we are still working on expanding, and so we are going to 12 inches. we're still working on bringing people in, as well as beginning to advocate and educate the communities that we are all living in. So on Friday, actually, is everybody familiar with CASA? Mm-hmm. Yes. On Friday, we are doing a CASA training in Eugene that I have just kind of organized with one of the CASA supervisors. And so for 2 hours, we're going to be sitting on a panel, and I think Stacy's going and Pamela will be there. And they're just going to ask us questions, and we're just going to educate them about our ideas about how CASAs can help us better, and they're going to tell us what they can do better, and it's just going to be a big CASA training, basically. So there's little things like that. We're hoping to start getting involved with foster parent trainings and come here more often and do legislative hearings and just find different ways to educate our communities. Every community is different, so there's different ways to educate each community. In June, there's a big teen conference where there's going to be a lot of foster youth, former foster youth, and current foster youth. And so we're going to be there representing OFYC and hopefully getting lots of people involved and telling everybody about OFYC. So there's lots of different things that we're going to be doing, lots of different little things. May is National Foster Care Month, so right now we are doing a duffel bag drive, and we're going to be filling up these duffel bags with the essentials that youth need to get through the first days in care, because we don't have anything when we're pulled from our homes. We have the clothes on our back and our backpacks if we're lucky. So they don't have soap, socks, underwear, anything. I have every Greek house in Eugene. All the sororities, all the fraternities are in on the drive, and I've already got a trunk full of stuff I need to drop off at HSB after the hearing today. So those are going to go to youth when they're first put in care, so they have things, and so they also have bags to help them pack when they go to home. So, you know, we're trying to attack every little thing and do what we can to help, but we're also trying to educate so everybody else that is on our team and listening can also help us in the future.
Okay. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do recognize that we have other individuals to speak, and I want to be respectful of time. And you have been very articulate spokespeople. I think that it's helped remind some of us perhaps of our parental roles when our children were in college. Some less than pleasant interactions, but the importance of those to their success ultimately, I can really appreciate that. I was reflecting a little bit on some of the first term conversations. But I've also been a foster parent, and the multiple placement issue is something that I can certainly appreciate how challenging that must be. I'd be interested from your perspectives, or whoever might want to answer, some of the reasons you see for the multiple placement. And let me preface that with, as I said, I've been a foster parent too, and I had plans for the rest of her life, basically, until after I took her through her pregnancy as a 16-year-old, and the child was placed with it for adoption, and basically I lost control within a week after her delivery, to the point where she couldn't live in our household any longer, and that's always left me with a frustration that I couldn't reach her about some of the future plans that I thought were there on the horizon for her. So I'd be interested, very interested, from any of our post-foster children perspective, what can we do differently in the family structure that would help with keeping it a little more permanent?
I can, because I am actually in a home where it is permanent right now. When I was 16, I moved in with my best friend at the time. Her parents got an emergency license in 6 months for me, and since then they haven't really been involved in foster care. I mean, they don't really even know that I'm here right now advocating for foster care, but they just did it probably to make their daughter happy. But I am 21 years old, and I still go home to their house for holidays and stuff. The thing with them is that they are adamant that they are my parents and that they're going to be there for the future. And even though you can tell that to a youth and forever, every day of their life, they're not going to believe you. And I still don't believe it. I still think that there's a chance that one day, they could cut me off and not want anything to do with me type of thing. But they're still here 5 years later. And the fact that they are, they are always going to be somebody always calling me for every holiday. Are you going to come home? We're waiting for you. We have a dinner table plate set for you, blah, 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 that kind of thing. It's also a matter of involvement. With every little thing I mention, they ask me a bajillion questions, making sure that, they are involved and they know everything that's going through my head about everything. I went to Disneyland to work for a couple summers, and every summer they're asking me every day questions about Disneyland and how it's going and all that kind of thing. So it's a matter of involvement, and, even though your youth isn't going to believe that you are their foster parent forever, you still tell them type of thing. And, I think a lot of it has to do with honesty. I hate it when foster parents lie, or they believe that you... It's kind of hard to explain. My foster parents can't understand that, I don't believe them, that they're going to be there forever. They just can't wrap their mind around that, because they think that I think that they're lying. And it's not that I think they're lying. It's just reality. I have a history of going through different foster homes, and so it's not something that I can easily believe. So it's going to take time, and it's something that they need to understand. So you just have to understand, where we're coming from, and also just be there and be involved in their life and help them with little things that... like their driver's license, just helping them get their insurance kicked in. We're more than capable of getting a job and paying for our insurance if you help us get a job and maybe pay for the first month of insurance, and we'll pay you back type of thing. Just kind of see us halfway, and don't let us do whatever you want. Just be our parents. Just act like a parent. So that was help with permanency, I guess.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Did that help a little bit, Representative Cowan?
Well,
I'm sorry to shut you down here, Omar. We're running out of time, and there are a few other folks here right now that we'd like to get up here. But thank you very much.
Share with me afterwards.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, you'll see him out in the hallway?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Let's see. Is Tony Costellas here?
I didn't talk about him. I wanted to do that.
Yeah, Troy Costellas.
Troy. Excuse me, I have Troy here.
Thank you.
afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I'm the administrator of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And I was asked to be here this morning in part just to give you a brief update on a bill that is currently in session, actually scheduled 1 o'clock in House Transportation. So Vice Chair Boone is to hear about this work session at 1 o'clock, the bill a little bit more. Senate Bill 125 was a bill brought forward by the Oregon Department of Transportation through the governor in relationship to the driver education program in Oregon. Driver education is not mandatory, but it is. There's an incentive for a teen to go through driver education on their way to a license. Once a teen has their permit, they do 50 hours of time behind the wheel with a licensed parent, guardian, individual, and then they have an option at that point in time. They then can do an additional 50 hours for a total of 100 hours of drive time, or 50 hours at the base and take an ODOT-approved driver education course. They then can take that information with their permit after 6 months to DMV to then apply for and test for their driver license. Currently in the state, it's not mandatory to take driver ed, so it's incentivized, but there is a subsidy behind the scenes that ODOT provides to the public sector that teaches driver education to help lower the cost for the parent for driver education. Well, the Senate Bill 125 allows my office to work with the private companies that are also providing driver education. They're meeting or exceeding the standards of teaching our youth the skill of driving. So this bill is intended to allow my office to reimburse those private companies the behind-the-scenes subsidy to, again, lower the cost and provide more driver education around the state. The Dash 1 amendment that was brought up last week on Senate Bill 125 brings into play the ability for my office to reimburse DHS into the foster program, be able to reimburse them for the parent cost for foster youth that go take driver education as a part of their way to getting their license. Now, the foster youth would have to, these are my words, so I don't know the exact term, but you know, the code of conduct to essentially earn the ability to go take the driver education, not being in a runaway status, you know, no unfortunate incidents with law enforcement or alcohol or drugs, and staying in school, that they've earned the ability to say that DHS would then pay the parent cost for that foster youth to go take driver education. They complete driver education, that's done. What the Dash 1 amendment would allow is DHS to then send me, my office, the bill, and we would reimburse DHS for the parent cost of that particular teen going to driver ed. What that does in a couple different things, it provides a high-quality training program for these teens on training. The Oregon program has been studied internationally and nationally and has been shown to be effective in teaching teens to drive. Teens that take the Oregon driver education program 10 to 15% less likely to get a traffic ticket, 20 to 30% less likely to get in a crash, and 50 to 60% less likely to have their license suspended. So there are quality teachers and quality programs around the state that are making a difference. It also helps out in those cases where you have foster parents that may have multiple youth. Just for the most part, they have to get the 50 hours and then potentially another 50. 100 hours behind the wheel during 6 months is a lot of time. So doing 50 hours and the course may help out in that family situation, particularly if they've got multiple teens, that they're able to get all of those hours in, but also helps the parent in a situation where you've got a trained professional helping the teen how to drive. And I think it in part also may help with self-esteem. It may help with the teen feel more plugged in, another training program that they've got out there that's, you know, outside of relying necessarily on the parent. When a couple of the scenarios that were painted, you know, this may help out in that conversation as well. I do want to put one caution, and two of the teens of the last panel just mentioned that. The cost of driver education can be expensive. The parent cost can be anywhere from $150 to $400. But it's not the most expensive part of driving. You've got the vehicle, you've got the gas, but you have the insurance. Typically today, a teen cost for insurance can be $200 to $300 a month. So in the process of going through this, What I don't want to have happen is a situation where someone thinks that that's, you know, the free ticket to driving, and off I go without thinking that one step further. There's an insurance part of it related to it too, and also there's the rules and regs by the adults for those vehicles and how they can be used, when they can be used, because what I don't want to see happen is to have kids, unfortunately, behind the wheel in a citation or, you know, heaven forbid, in a crash situation. You know, this driving is serious business, and it's a great opportunity for this Dash 1 amendment that House Transportation is going to look at in work session. I anticipate, because there's a fiscal relationship with my office and DHS, that this very likely may end up in Ways and Means and in the subcommittee Representative Huffman's on for the Transportation Economic Development side of Ways and Means to square the two state agencies up. But the funds are there to be able to do it. The Dash 1 amendment does put responsibility on DHS to help put in play the rules of the road, if you will, for these teams that are eligible. And on my side of the shop, we've got quality programs around the state that do make a difference in teens' lives and in their driving behavior and driving skills. And I think in a small way, of all the things that the youth have been advocating for and the foster program is there, in a small way, I think this is a positive step and a positive move. And with that, Mr. Chairman, hopefully hit the highlights of what's there. I know Representative Boone's heard some of this before in House Trans, but more than happy to answer any other questions.
Troy, does the Dash 1 amendments also address the issue with documentation?
Mr. Chair, it does not. This is solely aimed at the teens, the 15, 16, 17-year-old, on their way to get their license to have driver ed inserted. It does not touch any of the other pieces of the licensing process or the documentation.
So that would be another area that we need to kind of work on as well then?
Yeah.
Okay. You always have a tenfold statistic.
That's
good.
Sir.
You've always been a good one to go to. I mean, wow. Okay. 10 to 15 less likely to get a citation. That's good.
This is the former police officer.
Yeah, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and owes me big time for this privilege.
Yes.
I really think that the press, if they're listening, should do a story on Troy's division of ODOT. It's very successful. You do a great job. I don't know why they don't do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you very much.
Anyways, I do greatly appreciate all the help you've given me over the years, too, as well, for statistics, especially seatbelts.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Mr. Fennell.
Sir. Chair Olson, the members of the committee, my name is Terry Fennell. I'm a foster parent. I brought some foster youth with me today that are not yet transitioned out, and primarily for that, if you have any questions for them, they may somewhat reluctantly, but may be willing to answer any of your questions. I would like to address, as a foster parent for 23 years, I'd like to address some of the issues that have been discussed already, just to give some perspective from a foster parent's point of view. In terms of Representative Van Orman's question about housing for youth as they transition out, Marion County does have that that's provided. They have a program for that that is available here in Marion County, so that some teens and a couple of the boys that are at my home are looking into that as a way to have some support as they transition out into the adult world. One of the things about driving that I'd like to just share with you in terms of from a foster parent's perspective, I've always been somewhat concerned and reluctant to provide my vehicle for the use of foster youth in my home just because of the potential challenges that might involve in terms of, you know, possible lawsuits coming back my way. So I would certainly encourage the use of driver's training, and we have had youth in our home that have been able to take advantage of that, and has been somewhat changed with regard to something was said about counties, about the fact that some counties are more supportive of that and some are less supportive of that, and that's been my experience having worked with more than one county with regard to this issue. So I do think that if there is some way that there could be the driver training offered with the costs being taken care of internally or however they would do that, I think that would be very beneficial for them to be able to use, you know, a driver's trainer car so they can get those hours, because I have seven youth in my home, and the issue of 50 hours times that would also be another issue if I was, even if I felt comfortable with allowing them to use my vehicle, it would be a challenge to do that when I take teens that are 15 to 18. And of course, I also would like to support and bring the need for the health care, the possibility of that providing the OHP to kids that are transitioning out. Several kids in my home over the years, a good percentage of kids that live in my house have had medical needs, primarily, you know, taking meds and so on, and for them to leave the system and then immediately lose their medication is extremely scary to me, as it should be to you, them being loose out there without having access to their meds. Some of those meds really do help stabilize these, and for them to have that go away immediately, I think, is something that would be a very big concern. So if you have any questions, like I say, these gentlemen sitting back here came with me, like they're trying to hide now. if you do have any questions, I'm sure they'd be happy to answer those, as is what I am.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair. Well, one of the questions I have as you're speaking is the insurance, the liability insurance, which I'm presuming the child would have to have. So have you had a youth in your home that actually got insurance and drove, and do we have problems with the insurance companies willing to insure these young people?
Representative Olson and Representative Van Orman, I have not had a child in my home, while living in my home, actually have a driver's license that and used a vehicle other than their parents' or grandparents' vehicle. And they were responsible on their end to take care of that insurance. I've never made arrangements to have it done, like I say, with regard to the youth doing it on his own. It's always been on, like I say, I think the one that comes to mind was a grandparent who was willing to come up with to put them on their insurance.
Okay.
That was possible.
But it does raise a question.
Okay. Representative Cowan?
Well, I think my question's been answered. It was along those same lines. I would think that to try to expand in your insurance coverage to allow you to train and let youth use your personal automobile would be rather cost prohibitive. So I think it follows along the lines.
Interesting. Well, we actually, for some of the guys that you have with you, Terry, I wouldn't mind actually hearing from them, a couple of them, if they've gone through this type of a situation, you know, from age 16 to 18 with the driver's license experience, and if they were able to stay in the foster home to completion through high school, or if they had to move, but they obtained a driver's license, what impact that had with them going into another home. I'd be interested in that.
And none of the boys in my home right now have a driver's license or have, yeah, actually, to be honest, have really expressed a large interest in trying to pursue that. And, of course, that is something that we feel would be beneficial. I mean, I, as a foster parent, feel it would be beneficial for them to have, especially as they age out, for all the reasons that were previously discussed. But we really haven't had that conversation with the particular gentleman I have with me today.
Hey, Representative Cowan.
Mr. Chair, from the smiles behind you, I suspect that the thought processes might be a little bit different. I don't want a driver's license. So if any of these individuals would be interested in talking a little bit about my question around what can we do better about permanency, from their perspective, I'd love to hear from them, but if they don't want to, I wouldn't want to put
it. Couple of you guys want to come on up?
Okay. We're not as scary as we look. That's why we tease each other so bad up here.
Maybe this is our Fifth Amendment. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. No problem.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. I can see a real need for this in the rural areas where there might not be public transportation opportunities, and especially like in my area. If you lived with a family in South Clatsop County and you're going to go to Clatsop Community College, there is a bus, but from what I hear, it's like, you know, you got to know the system really well, and it can take a long time, and if you miss it, then you miss it, and there you are stuck 30 miles away from home, and I think that it is a good idea to do something like this, just you know, it's one more, to be cliche, tool in the toolbox, you know. Because I just can't imagine, people tease me all the time for not carpooling or public transport. And I'm going, would you like to travel with me on a typical day in my life?
No.
Especially on a Monday or a Friday. 3 hours each way in the car. And you have to listen to the book on tape I'm listening to. But all over the district, all the time. And everything's at least a half hour or an hour away. So it's just not practical for me to do that. And I can't imagine if you're in school and you have a class maybe in the morning and then one in the afternoon, or you have a job in between. I just think this is really necessary. Now, in Salem and Portland or something, Eugene, Springfield, it might work to take the bus.
But it is an important skill, obviously, that they need. We had one young man in our house that actually was moving into the Marine Corps, and he could not get the job opportunity that he wanted in the Marine Corps because it required a driver's license. And so for him, he actually, he stayed in foster care longer, and the plan was for him to then get a driver's license. And that was the only reason that he stayed in care longer, was because he wanted to get, that bonus that they were going to offer him in the Marine Corps for, being able to do that particular job skill, but he had to have a driver's license in order to do that. And so he actually cost the state money, if you will, in foster care just because he was trying to get a driver's license. And that was the one thing that was holding him back. Now, he did procrastinate a little bit earlier on. He could have maybe done that, but he did. That was the thing that kept him in care longer, because he actually had signed a document with the Marine Corps to say, I will be out on this day, and he wasn't ready on that day, and so he stayed in care in order to get the driver's license so he could get the job opportunity that he wanted.
Representative Van Orman.
Tara Olson, I just want to say, I don't want these kids to leave thinking that because they're foster kids, they're different, because a lot of us, our first years at college were confusing and frightening, and we didn't know what we were doing either. The second thing I want to say is I had an employee who didn't drive, and I told her that she could have this job, but she would have to learn to drive. And now she's probably the most movable employee that they have. So I just don't want these kids to think that because they're foster, they're different, because other kids have the same issues.
Okay. Terry, before you leave, I sense from everybody up here there is a serious concern that we don't want to we want stability. From what we heard earlier this morning, I would prefer to see the stability to the point where the children, students are clearly under the 10 for that 30% increase, 30% that are in and out of homes, K through 12. I would love to see them have the opportunity afforded to them to get a driver's license as well, because I agree with what you're saying for the self-esteem issue, or what Troy had mentioned earlier. That's huge, and especially when you perked up the Marine Corps issue. I mean, yeah, I don't want to be an obstacle.
Right.
So, thank you.
I appreciate that. One thing I would like to make a comment, Steve, you mentioned, talk about stability a little bit. The law that was passed, I think it was last session, about allowing youth to stay in their same school district even though they moved around in foster care, I want you to know that my observations of that bill is that it's been very, very positive. I have had youth in my home now that have come to my home from different schools in the Salem area here, and they were able to stay in those schools. And in one particular case, I had three boys come from another school, and they were at my house for about 6 months, and then moved back into that same area. And yet they never skipped a beat with regard to their school. And so that bill was extremely beneficial, I think, to a lot of youth. And I certainly appreciate the fact that you guys all worked on that before. So I'd like to say just thanks for that, because it is making a difference where they can stay in the same school.
Okay. Area. Very good. Thank you.
We have DHS here if you would like to ask them to respond to anything.
Good morning, Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Kevin George, a.k.a. DHS.
The acronym, what's that?
The Department of Human Services, and where's the pig jar to put the money in? So, again, Kevin George, and I work as a foster care program manager over at DHS, and I quite honestly have the wonderful opportunity of working with some of these young folks and being challenged by them over and over on a number of issues. And as I sit here, certainly the last hour and a half is probably the best hour and a half of my week, for sure, to hear this kind of information. And it is about what has changed. And comments that folks have had from Representative Demerill around where is the Oregon Foster Youth Connection going and growing and will they be around, I can assure you that oftentimes that some of you who have been new to the committees or new to legislature coming in and start hearing about foster care, it has really been like trying to take a drink out of the fire hose. There's just so much stuff, and it's coming at you so fast, and that folks oftentimes do the system, we can't do anything about it, and walk away to find something else. But I can tell you that there are a number of folks that are continuing to stay around to try to take little drinks out of that fire hose, because that's the key to this system. It is, how do you break things down small enough? One example is Ms. Pamela Butler here, who you've all seen a couple of times. She and I worked on some policy changes here about 6 years? All right, so I'm kind of fudging because I'm getting old, but about 6 years ago on face-to-face contact, so caseworkers seeing kids on a 30-day basis, and so was Pamela doing an internship at that time, and I worked on this, and so she's still around, and it is about those folks that have a commitment to stay around, to work on these issues, and to break it down. A few years ago, I also was challenged. I have the independent living program that's in my shop, my area, and asked for a National Resource Center to come in and start doing a review of our program. What are we working on? What are we missing? And they come up with some great recommendations. And two that have stuck with me for the last couple of years have been, one is that they were assured and very confident that the fact that I have teenagers in my household, I have a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, and now an 18-year-old for 7 days, in my household, that I too will be seeing transitions. And as long as I... And they challenged me to think about, as I look at transitions for my own kids, to look at my transitions for my kids at work. So as they're talking about going off to college and health insurance, I'm dealing with that with my daughter right now. And that's one of those things that keeps hitting home over and over. I think the important part is to really look at, this is about hope, and this is about breaking things down smaller. It's about relationships such as you heard with Troy. We may not be able to do everything about driver's license and insurance and all that kind of stuff, but what we can do is to take a small bite out of this piece. We can take care of the driver's ed now. We can get that done now. We can then move into policy, and I've got some of my staff working on what are the policies in other states about driver's license and what are the requirements and this and that. The next thing then would be to say, okay, so who are the insurance folks out there? You know, one of the things we challenge folks to is to say, with foster care, not everybody can be a foster parent, but there are ways you can help foster children, help foster families in multiple ways. And one of the things that I've challenged some of my colleagues that I've met through work or through church or other places that are attorneys, other folks, to say, you know what, maybe you have the right connections to pull insurance companies together, to say GEICO, to say Allstate, to say State Farm. How about developing one master policy for foster youth? And so you underwrite some of those issues. So as a group, then they come together for an insurance plan, and so they're not all out there purchasing. So Jamie's not out there having to go buy $200 for her, and Omar's got to go buy $200 or $300 for him because he's a male. So how do we get other folks to step forward to do this kind of work? So really, the information you're hearing here is about a long sustained plan of people that are committed, people that are passionate, and everybody can do their parts. You have your role, I have my role, Pamela has her role, Terry has his role, and together that's how we change the system. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great wrap up. You did good.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else want to chip in? All right, we'll close the informational hearing at this time, and Human Services Committee for today is adjourned.